It really is a big story, this book. It starts out with a lot of things that you may or may not have known. And then it goes to how the story came to be and how the story came to my friends and how it ended up being I was the last guy that knew it. So which is why I finally wrote it. Says, well, if I'm the last one that knows it, then that's okay to write now. But then I said, I'm not going to write an analysis. I'm not going to give a Jungian critique, because that would be a disservice to this poor story, because then it would still be alive, you see, if we didn't do that. It wouldn't be killed. So what I did is I described the life that one lives as the story. In other words, I live this story. I still live it out. You know, I live it. I do live it. And it is not a dead thing, and it's not a metaphor. I actually live it out. And it comes to the United States. It comes right to here, to LAX, and across those mountains over there in old Buick. But it starts several thousand years before I was born. So that's a lot of work. And I was never sure to write it until I had enough people who were actually reading the other stuff so they could understand maybe some of that. But it turns out that the book was all right all by itself. And then people are digging it anyway. So I'm very proud of that, and I'm very happy. And I wanted to give it to you as a gift. Luckily, I like to just be able to hand them out to people. But in America, nobody likes anything if you just give it to them. They all want to scramble and buy it, and then they have great value for it, and they frame it and all that. So it's not entirely the case. There's a group of people up here in Elk and up in the area, Mendocino Coast, and your wonderful California area, which I really like a lot. If it was just not so many people, I'd move here. But also, it's got a lot of laws. I mean, I'm illegal here, basically. I mean, it's only two things I do right, I think. But they have this one little town up there, these old hippies, you know, they got one copy of each one of my books. They chip in, you see, because they don't have any money. And they come down, all the book signs, and have me sign everybody's name who gets born. So it's like one of those old Bibles, you know. We're like on page 30 now. We got all these little kids, you know, and then people die, and they leave, and they bring these old tattered copies of my book, and I sign it. I like that, too. I love that. It's really nice, so. You know, it's easy to hate. It's really hard to love. It's really hard. But it's the best thing. That's what we got to do. So it's very hard for people who've been through nothing to love. It's much easier for people who've been through hell to love. And that's the strangest thing. You see all the people come from the old camps, the Holocaust. They're fine. But their kids got lots of troubles. You see, and this is the problem we run into today. I mean, my children, they want to vindicate everything that happened to me. I said, baby, you got to go through initiation, you see, but there's no initiation for them. I have one son who lives here with you in L.A. He's going through hard times. He's a wonderful artist, he's a magnificent guitarist, well known. But it's very hard for him because he still wants to go through the literalism of the spirituality instead of saying, no, it's from the grief we build culture. Culture is not built from success. It's built only from failure. If you build your culture from success, then you have a huge grief debt. So it's your griefs that bring you together. And if you do not use your griefs to bring together, you will be a violent people. And that's no skin off anybody's back, because that's how it's been up to now anyway. So what's new about that? So it would be a very new look if people understood how to take their grief and keep it as grief, and keep it hollow, and use your hollowness and your grief to make a gift to what you can't see. That is the thing that is starving in this universe that always feeds you anyway. This world is the grief of the holy. This world, this matter that we live in, are the tears of the other world. They have said, minds have lots of good ways to say it. They say, the father of the sun in the sky has eyes made of bees, weeps honey. My heart is a hive. My happiness is God's tears. You know, I mean, they got cool ways of saying stuff. When you don't have a verb to be, you got to be cool. You say, you can't say, this is good. You can't even say it. It's no word. Somebody asks you, you want a cup of coffee? You can't say yes. You have to explain it, which I think is a good policy, you know, because it's called conversation most places. I mean, you know, and then you go down to South Central, everybody says it's really bad, but everybody talks to everybody, you know, and you're saying, oh, it's really good in the suburbs. You go there, nobody talks to nobody, you know. You can't even find anybody. They're on there on their cell phones, you know, because they are in South Central. Anyway, enough of that. I've been asked for you people to ask me questions. This is a very dangerous thing to ask me a question because I tend to like make big long answers that last for 3 and 4 or 5 decades. And they end up becoming an initiatory event. So I've been asked to promise to keep my answer short, which is really going to be weird. So I'll do my damnedest. But do you have any questions? Les, please.
I'm just wondering, what would it take?
They're going to make you go to the microphone, man. You know? It's just like on Oprah, man. You gotta go to the microphone. You know? I got one on too. Look, it's only the size of a flea. You could eat it if you didn't wash out. I'll probably walk out with it and they'll be recording me, you know, in the bathroom. It would be very dangerous.
I wondered what it would take for you to mention Southern California in your next acknowledgments of your next
book. Oh, did I forget you?
Well, you just said Northern California.
Oh, it's because nobody in Southern California was ever nice to me except you. Southern California was always hated me. I could never get a gig in L.A., I never got any gigs in San Diego. Everybody told me, you know what? All the colleges said that I was an anathema to all of the anthropology departments. They said that the literature departments threw me down. Nobody here would hire me for nothing. So I never put them in the acknowledgments. And anybody that was from here went to the north to see me, which is they said they were, they'd rather be anyway. So I would definitely put it in the next because I finally come here to speak to the people that didn't want to see us. We were with shopping cart here. When we first came from Guatemala, with $7 to our name. And the only people that welcomed us were the Jews. They're the ones that saved our life. And they were Polish Jews. Well, one was Israeli Jew, actually. And they lived down in Orange County. And it's in the book, the whole story. The Jews were the only ones that wanted to see us. And they weren't exactly from here. They weren't exactly welcome in certain places either. So, yeah. In the next book, God give us all life. And the next printing, I'll stick you in there. Don't worry about it. I'll tell Harper, hey, you got to put my friends in here. Because I always forget somebody so often. It's usually my very best friend, which has happened this time again. One of my best friends lives here too in Malibu. He's from Guatemala. And I love this man. He's like one of the most wonderful friends to me. And I always forget to put him in there because I just think he's like in there because I'm there, you know, and I forget and I feel terrible. So I'm sorry. I bow to anyone I've forgotten. I'm always catching hell for this. But my acknowledgments are so great that they're bigger than the books. So, you know, I'm going to publish separate acknowledgments, other volumes. I'll do better in the future. I'm sorry. I apologize. Yes, please.
All right. I'm a vegetarian.
Yes.
And I'm also, I try to eat organic as much as possible.
Me too, yeah. It's a good idea.
You do the same thing?
I try to. It's on the road. It's difficult.
Okay. Yes. And I'd like you to mention what connections do you have or do you know of Costa Rica, El Salvador, you know, those other countries?
And regarding what?
Regarding to your life, because you just referred to Mexico.
Well, I don't have much relationship with Salvador or Honduras or Costa Rica in a concrete sense. I have many Salvadorian friends, many Honduranian friends, catrachos, you know, and everybody, but I don't have any great knowledge of that. Costa Rica is basically an American colony. I mean, there are no native people left there. The native people are there trying to regain something. But it's basically, there's some fraudulent aspect of Costa Rica. Ticos are wonderful people. I love Costa Rica. We play a lot of music, everything. But it's nothing, it's not even related to the rest of Central America because it does not have the same pain. That's why it gets Nobel Prizes for peace because it doesn't have anybody to raise and rabble rouse. There's no Mayans there. There's no Mesquite Indians there. There used to be. There were tons of them. They were annihilated and exterminated very early on. So everybody conveniently forgot them. It's kind of like Iowa. There's a lot of Indians in Iowa. There's a whole lot of Indians, but most of them are living in Oklahoma. Not all. But it's the whole thing is, what about the people in Virginia? And no one says, there's no Indian problem in Virginia. Yeah, because they kill everybody in Oklahoma. They're there. A lot of people are there. Why, when you talk about Mississippi, they're the black Choctaws. Black Choctaw are the only ones that can speak Choctaw anymore, what you call Muscogee. Yeah? And they're holding it for everybody. The Catawbas are holding it for everybody. Nobody talks about it. There's no Indian problem in Mississippi. Yeah, that's because they sent everybody to Oklahoma. And they're all African Indians. Amazing people. They're still around. They're still cooking, man. They're keeping quiet, but they're cooking. No, it's a going thing. And you know what else? All the Irish and the Scots and the Welsh that were set adrift by the English in the clearances. You remember that? I hope you do if you're from this world. Set adrift. Most of those people ended up marrying Muscogees and Choctaws and Chickasaws and Uchis and what you like to call Cherokees. Just why all the Cherokees got names like McGinnity and Ark. And you go to Oklahoma, talk to all the Southeast Indians, they all got Irish and Welsh and Scottish last names because they married. And when the Irish had the potato famine, the Muscogee Nation sent them more aid than the United States. They sent them potatoes and meat and all kinds of things. The Native Americans sent boatloads from Oklahoma. There are amazing things in this world that people don't know about. So Costa Rica, Salvador, Honduras, they're people that have been really, really ripped by war and trouble. They are beautiful countries. In Costa Rica, everybody likes to go to. Honduras is a wonderful place. If people don't like Honduras, I love Honduras. Salvador, I love Salvador. It's very hard for me to go to Salvador and Guatemala. I can't go there anymore. Guatemala is impossible for me to go. Salvador, I will go. The Salvadorians, it's amazing, wonderful people. Plus, they have some of the best food on the earth. I mean, so does Guatemala. But as far as relationship with these countries politically, Americans are always thinking they're going to fix those countries. But your lawns are killing those countries. Your sofas are killing those. Your televisions are killing those countries. But this country I want you to concentrate on is this country. And I want you to concentrate on it right here first. Because this is the territory. You cannot export. You're wanting to do well until this thing is well. Because you're exporting more trouble. No matter how good you are and how sweet you are, how left-wing you are, this has got to be cool first. And it ain't cool. This place is sick. And it's in trouble. That does not mean it's not good. That old Germanic thing that you're sick means you're evil, that's bullshit. You're sick means you need doctrine. It means you need healing. And healing is a good thing. Now, this way, it's been long. I mean, it's a lot of job for me here, but it's one I don't want. I want to ride my horse, kiss my sweetheart, and I want you to all be happy and well. And I want Salvador and Honduras and Los Ticos and everybody else to be well. Everybody to be well. And the whole world. So I'm not much use for you. As far as organic food goes, that's definitely the best revolution you got going at the moment. No, it's the only one that's kind of happening. It doesn't look like one, but it is. It's a really good thing. Because your food killing you, man. And your water, not to mention you stole it all from New Mexico. But, I mean, it's true. I was so, oh, I'm going to get into that subject matter. I'm going to get into the local thing. But the organic food is holy. Spirit in the food is holy. People do not run that spirit. It runs itself. It can go extinct at any moment because it's courageous. It doesn't need you. But you need it. So you've got to give gift to the spirit of this food. That's what they do. We go around doing things. It's not hoodoo. And it's not strange. It's extremely, extremely practical and pragmatic. So anyway, I'm sorry. You want to ask a question? I'm going on. See, I told you it's dangerous to ask me.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my question. Yeah. It's four sections, so whichever one
you
want.
Oh, you're like
answer.
Me. All right. Met my match.
I wanted to get your understanding of Mesoamerican shamanic understanding and the representation for the number 13.
Oh.
Also.
One question at a time, maybe. Yes.
Okay.
Or are they all related?
No.
If they're all related, then I hit them. By. 13, the word in Mayan is Mesoamerica. He's talking about means all of Central America. They have a very heavy thing with the number 13. In different languages in Mesoamerica, there's different ways of saying it. In Mayan language that I speak, the basic word for it is Oshlehuch. You can say Oshlehuch. Oshlehuch, 13 among the Tzotzil people, only one I claim to speak for, you understand, is the same as 12. This makes anthropologists nuts, that 12 and 13 are the same. It's like the Kabbalah. Because you take the 12, each one of the 12 has a very holy significance from 1 to 12. Each one is very different, very different, very different. But each one is the sum of the other two, which makes the third one. Like 1 plus 1 makes 3 in sacred mathematics. All right? It doesn't make 2. Yeah? And so you keep going until you get all the way to 12. When you get to 12, all the other 12 added together makes another 1. And that's added onto the 12, which becomes the 13th. The 13th of anything among Tzotzil people is the most powerful and the most holy. But because it contains, it means complete. So Mayan words also, Mayan numbers, the words for the Mayan numbers also do not just mean numerical things. So they can't just say the numbers without, you know, just casually, because they mean holy things, especially when you combine them with other nouns. So for instance, the word for a human being in Mayan is vinak. Or if you go up to other areas, vinik or winak is a different dialect. But vinak among the Tutukhil, this means 20. You got 10 toe, 10 fingers. So everybody is called a 20. It says, look, that's one of our 20s. It means it's our people. But it's very holy because it doesn't simply only mean 20. Any more than 13 only simply means 13. 13 also stands for all the places you can feel pulse on your body. If the world itself is a body, and your body is the world, the places where you can feel pulse is hard, which means basically in the wrists, we're blessed with arms. You know, some are not having arms, so we got to remember that. But and they are holy for that, because they made the sacrifice to that time. But you'll get to it when I speak it. In this place, 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 this place, this place, in the groins, and on your neck. They give you the 13 places in the world where you can feel pulses. The left side of the body is considered to be female. The right side is considered to be male. The middle is hermaphroditic, where the spine lives. The left side of the world, as you will, is female. Therefore, it relates to wintertime. And so all of the sunups and the sundowns in the Mayan calendar are geared according to the body itself, to all of these little joints. So they're called the joints of time. And there are 13 major festivals that take place in these 13 joints of time. This one, of course, being during the equinox, twice, which means, doesn't that mean it's 14? Exactly. Because the word 14 means strong. That means we already began again. See, it has all these mysterious little beautiful things. Now, the 20s that are in there, if you multiply them times this place, you get 260, which gives you the pregnancy of time. 260 days. So you have 20 day names which are deified and 13 numbers which go with them. We never say these names out loud. There's all these books about it. It's a terrible travesty for natives from that place. You start reading that in the radio in Guatemala, everybody switch off the radio. So you have all these books written about it, because every time you call one of these numbers or these combinations, it's deified and it needs a sacrifice. Not a heart cut out of a body. But time needs to be fed, and that's what makes it matter. Turns it into matter, M-A-T-T-E-R. Yeah? So 13 means complete. So you can say, out of context, not with the day names, you can say 13 mountain, 13 valley, 13 man, 13 woman, 13 hill, 13 inside of hill, 13 caves, 13 winds, 13... That means magnificent this, magnificent completely that. It means the year has gone around a complete circle and everything has been fed and everything lives according to its nature. So the word Oshilichuch, or 13, it's a big, powerful, complete thing. But the 13th one is always a hobbling, poor little thing. So the culture hero is not this Conan-looking fool. You know, this is not a guy in a tank, all right? It's a guy who can't walk straight, who thinks bugs are cute, you know? And talks to the monsters and cajoles them out of their hate. So the Stutuhil culture hero, the 13th one, is like you that know how to grow organic food. You're growing these beautiful corn plants, which come from the Mayans originally, most of them. And you'll find this last little, so we were on the bottom, you know, it's a poor little thing. This last little cob from the last of the year. Got three little kernels on there that kind of look like this. And they got corn, little, you know, silks going. Some got 15 heads, and, you know. They've got a lot of style, but not a lot of corn, you know. And the Mayans, that's the chip. They're the holiest of all the holy. So they're so brilliant, these people from ancient time, that when they have this corn, they take the most beautiful corn from the field, and they save it up there. And then they take the funniest old chuecos as the chip, and they keep them side by side, because this is the master and the missus, and this one is the child. And then they mix the seeds together, so the most crooked and the most straight must always be mixed together. When you only take the straight, people with straight teeth and people with certain kind of skin, your culture goes to Nazis. No, this is true. And the same with your genetics. When you start separating them out, instead of letting all of those things do their job and dance together, there'll never be any love until the short guy and the little fat lady dance together, man. Because that's what makes the holy jive. So the 13 really represents that. That's really what it represents. You get, then you're talking about shamanic. That's a shamanic area of that. So the shamans are looked upon as 13 because they're abnormal. They're atypical. They're not. They did not graduate from some college. They're like the ones you don't let in, you know. But we have the guys that graduate too, and they go together, you know. So, all right. How are we doing? We're too short. Yeah? No problem. First of all, I'd like to thank this Louis Steinman for letting us come over here and bother you with all our things. I'd also like to thank this library, and I hope to investigate it thoroughly one of these days because there's a lot of books here I've been wanting to read and I haven't found anywhere else. I'm trying to see if they make facsimiles. So I'm writing a lot of other books at the moment. They're very powerful. Not this kind of thing, a little bit different. And the other thing, I would like to thank all of you. And I know there's probably a lot of questions you would like to ask, and there's a lot of questions I would like to answer in a slow way. I do a lot of classes up and down these coasts. I do have a website which you can look up. It's floweringmountain.com if you're interested in that. I do not come close to a computer ever, so I don't even know what's on it. But people tell me it's nice, and my wife does all that. But this book I wrote is a love story, but it's actually a love letter to what I love. And it's mostly a love letter to my wife. It's mostly what it is, because she saved my life. And the story itself. And I couldn't think of anything better to do than use the story that saved my life and give that as a love letter to my wife, whose name is Johanna Keller. And she's one of your people. She's from the United States, and Midwestern kid. But I love her, and nobody can do nothing about it. Okay? I just wanted you to know that it's no fooling around with this. I'm very serious. And I want you to know that your stories are very important. And no matter how objectivist you become about things, you got to remember that your objectivity is useful and wonderful and everything, but your spirit must have grief. There must be a place where your viciousness and your anger and your drama and all that has to become a gift to something bigger than yourself and not just the society. You must give to one another. You must give your art to one another. You must give your social work to one another. You got to do that. That's why we're human. We give love to each other in whatever way we find to do it, yeah? Each does in their own ways, some small, some big, and some in unknown ways. But there's also a third thing. You've got to give the product of the grief of how hard it is to be a human being communally together. You've got to somehow find a way to turn that grief of how hard it is to be a human into some kind of beauty that you can give to the thing that you cannot see, that is not a person, and it ain't in your temples. You know? And it's in the ground itself. It's in the ocean. It's in the valleys. It's the holy nature. No human knows what that looks like. Nobody's got a handle on it. But everybody got the capacity and is worthy enough to give a gift to it. And I don't know how you're going to go about doing that. I just know how I do it. And some of you know me, know what that means. But that's not important for us to get into. So I'm going to make a little blessing as I leave. And then I'll go up and try to sign books as long as in class and they let us stand around. It's going to be up there, though, so don't come up here to make me sign books, because you know what happened? I'll do it. And they'll be mad at me, so. I'll just make a blessing so you don't feel so sad and you don't feel so guarded, you know, so your stories can bubble out and you can write your books and say your things. And those of you, please learn your ancestral tongue or one of them. You may have many. Learn one of them. You must learn languages. This country is insane. L.A. is pretty good. They got lots of languages here. You're cool. You go to rent a car, you got 7 translators. It's good. No, it's good. I love that. I think that's good. But learn your ancestral language if you can possibly swing it, at least to be able to speak with the old timers. And then when you got that under your belt, I'm not talking about writing it, because writing a language got nothing to do with language. I'll get that. You come to my writing classes. We'll get into that. 8 days, man, in Mexico. We'll tell you all about it. But then, when you're done learning your ancestral tongue, learn the tongue of your ancestors' enemies. And all the Inuit big Indian jokes, I already know English, you know, but learn it more, you know. I don't know. I'm trying not to be too funny, but it's really important to learn these two things, because once an Armenian guy came to me, a kid, and he says, oh, okay, and he went off, and 2 years later, he came back, he could speak Armenian. He's a big guy. He's from down here. He's from San Diego. And he spoke Armenian, came up to me. I said, I can speak Armenian. I did it. I says, how is it? I can talk to my grandparents. I know all the deals they're making and everything. It's amazing. I said, well, that's good. And then he started whispering. And just like on the stage, he said, and I learned Turkish too. I said, why are you whispering? Well, my ancestors, my ear. Yeah. He learned Turkish, I said, really. He got all scared. And he says, why are you really whispering? Because I like Turkish better. No, of course, Armenian Turkish has a lot of borrowing. But the point is, there's not going to be no love between human beings until we get into our languages and revamp this language that is going downhill with the computers, because it is a mining warfare language. You hear all the Buddhists talking about burning down the house of this and melting all the bodhicitta. You know, this is a warfare language, man. It's a warfare language. That's okay. I'm not putting on Buddhism at all. I'm very friendly with all these guys. But I'm saying in English, you know, the war on poverty. You know, man, it's a war, man. It's a war. I don't want a war. I don't want a war. This is a warfare culture, man, because it's based on extraction. It's based on getting what you want, and it's not based on grief. And until it's based on grief, it won't be based on art, because anything that's art, that says it's art and ain't based on grief, is not art. It's only depression. So I'm going to bless you so that you can make some beauty out of your griefs and get together. And don't lose your diversity. Do not mush up and homogenize. The trick is to get together without losing your differences. You need each other to survive our orthodoxies. You know, in Tangier, they have Sephardic Jews who had to leave Spain. And in Passover, they're not allowed to have leavened bread. But they're the bakers. And they use starter. And starter doesn't come from the store. It comes passed down from mother to daughter for hundreds of years. So on Passover, all the Muslims go through the town and special bowls made of pottery that they make, and they take all the leavened bread starters and take them into their house during Passover. And the Jews do their rituals. And when their rituals are over, they go to the Muslims and they give them back their starter and they bake them a big ton of bread. We need each other to survive our orthodoxies, but that doesn't mean we have to throw all our stuff away. Everybody, ki'il, utzil, utzlachbe, utzlachlo, nimelachtak. Asliman, Machon Lovla, Oshelachuch, Matyushir. Long life, honey in the heart, no evil. 13 thank yous. Thank you very much. I'm going to sign some books. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Matyush. Matyush Chuba.